When you first awaken, you find yourself in a world of simple farming. People who live lives of subsistence and necessity. You hear the livestock upon the hill, carts with goods and materials passing by outside. People beginning their day, workers in the distance. You have an ordinary life. You live an ordinary life. You listen to your parents, you follow their instructions. You blend into the daily life. Yet somehow, all of these people seem distant to you. They seem dim as the lamp runs low on oil. They seem plain. They seem small. You feel, you know, that you are more. You are not like them. Yet you inhabit and walk upon the same earth as them. You look like them, you feel like them, you speak as them. What are you? You are unsure, for there is nobody other than yourself as a guide. Profound events in your life begin to shape you. Your father meets his end too soon, and as you solemnly prepare his body for the primitive rites of farewell, a vision of his murder pierces your consciousness. In that moment of clarity, you understand all the necessary structures that must be applied to humanity, law, order, and leadership. But far worse, you see his death at the hands of his own brother. When you approach your uncle and seize his heart with a force of psychic power, you do so with a cold sense of understanding, devoid of sorrow and malice. In time, you will learn that you are stronger still. You can see things that others cannot. Sometimes you're persecuted when you show too much. But you begin to pass beyond their lives which seem so fleeting. Decades become centuries, and with each empire that passes, you feel ever surer that you can see with clarity the dangers that await coming ages. You decide that you must intervene, for this is not a choice, it is necessary. They must advance, and with haste, or none will survive the ages that are to come. You want to protect these beings who appear as you, but who are not like you. You have shared this world with them. You want to improve upon it. You try to become more involved to ensure that the dangers and the horrors you sense are coming do not come to pass. You fail. These small things have more willpower, more strength than you realize, and they're not so easily manipulated. You could use your power to dominate, but you do not wish to display or demonstrate the true extent of this, for you understand that this would be entirely counterproductive, at this time anyway. You see their worship, their religion, their studies of theology. You do not wish to become a godlike figure, and you feel certain that they would gravitate to this view of you rather than the literal. In time, you discover others like yourself, yet even they are not comparable to whatever you are. You still recruit them to your cause. You send them out among the world to find more who share these powers and the ability to evade the effects of entropy. You seek to guide, sometimes to rule, often to unify others. These individuals you have encountered and who share a fragment of what you are, some support your views, others do not. Some say that these people cannot be led, others that they should not. Those of us who are perpetual surely exist to only guide and passively encourage, not to rule, they say. Because these are people who are forever at war with themselves. It is a defining characteristic of their being, not a flaw. And it can only be driven out through an extended period of natural cultural evolution, not forced advancement. Or they will never truly pass beyond this primitive age, and without the right figure to lead them, they will always regress. You ignore their pleas, for you are the most powerful among them. You are eternal. You have seen beyond all others. You see in the humans leaders of promise, kings, tyrants. Some almost reach true and absolute power, but always they're undermined or consumed by their own power, leading inevitably to an implosion and a collapse of all they have achieved. Throughout this time that you will later consider to be the ancient period of humanity, who and what you are allows you to discover truths among the vast mass of mythological lies and arcane rites, ancient runes and languages which wield unimaginable power. What exists within you enables you to connect the pieces, to understand and learn more than anyone has ever known and will ever know. You are the vessel of all mortal mankind, their power channeled into a single being. You try other means to influence them, and you fail. You try again, and fail. You try all manner of different approaches. Some will see you rise to become a great leader of an age, and you lead with strength and force. You attempt to crush, dominate like a king, and build an empire. You fail. So you choose, this time, to stay in the shadows. You manipulate those in power and enable change through puppets and agents. Every approach leads to the same result. You wonder, perhaps something is stopping you. Something imperceptible. Maybe this is not your time. So you decide to fade into the background. You listen to the others of your kind who espouse a more neutral, passive role, allowing them to find their own path forward. And so you do. You watch as they build new empires, and you see them destroyed by others. But over thousands of years, they make incremental progress. They reach out within their own solar system, and eventually beyond. And somewhere throughout your past, you forget when. You have the strongest vision you have ever experienced, but it consumes you entirely. It is a vision of such profound and devastating horror that it breaks you from any belief that you could remain a passive bystander. That vision you endure is the destruction of humanity, the fall from light into darkness, creatures of pure malevolence. You have always felt them, you always have known that they exist and that they were aware of your luminescence. For you are a burning fire to them, a beacon. And the connection between that realm, yourself, the people you have shared your existence with, is entirely unbreakable. But to deny this reality now becomes your entire purpose. Humanity appears so strong. It has permeated the entire galaxy. Their technology has advanced to such levels you never imagined they might have been capable of. Few, if any, can stand against it. How could this dark future still come to pass? You begin to question, you wonder if it's even true, or if this is just one possibility. Perhaps you are seeing something that may never come to pass. For you have had many visions throughout your existence, and not all of them aligned with the reality you would experience. Cracks, though, begin to emerge, slowly. Systems fall. Regions of the galaxy are collapsing into open war. Reports are still sparse as to just what is happening, but it spreads like a fire. Soon the entire galaxy of humanity's Federation is consumed with war. But not of the alien. This is a war with itself, with the constructs and the artificial entities they have used to spread far and dominate all. You see the stirrings in the realm beyond our own. You feel their power swell and grow. It is becoming unstable. It risks enveloping and consuming the galaxy. Travel is becoming ever more unreliable, or even impossible. Systems and entire regions of space are becoming closed off and isolated. Worlds fall into disorder with themselves, and the humans have begun systematically destroying any and all technology that contains artificial intelligence. They're purging and destroying anything they fear could even be a potential risk to themselves. Human civilization is in a state of total collapse. What you see, though, is a clarity beyond any you have seen before, and you trust it. You know that this is the only path forward, no matter if any others disagree with you. This is how it will come to pass, and for any form of survival to happen, it can only occur if they are forced into your vision, your clarity, your design. You have lived this life 1,000 times. You understand them better than they understand themselves, and you know more than any other has ever known. Only you have the power within you to lead them to a new future, to avoid the descent into eternal darkness. You seek those others who are like-minded, figures of ancient orders, keepers of technology that is outlawed, masters of their craft who have not perished or been persecuted. You seek those friends and companions who have passed through the ages with you. For in this time, you will need those who you can trust, who will be loyal and aid you in building the foundations of the new future. Not all wish to hear or to listen. Some disappear. It matters not. You have enough to make a beginning. The galaxy has fallen now into a state of total isolation. The realm beyond has become one of complete, unrelenting turmoil. It is chaos. When the storm finally calms, you will be ready, for this is the time of preparation. And in this short time, you must take by force the raw materials of what remains and build yourself an army that cannot be resisted. One like no other, that will dominate all, crush any who would resist to build your empire, to bring total unification, and finally enable you to lead them into a future of security and a civilization that will usher in the final developments that will see them pass now beyond into a new era that will see you and they closer than ever before. This will not be like the mistakes of the past. This will be an empire that will last for eternity, a scale of dominion unlike any before it. This will be the age of their awakening, their ascendancy, the age of Imperium. Your Imperium. The Imperium of Mankind. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This famous quote you've probably heard many times before originates from a man, John Dalberg Acton, a British historian and politician during the 19th century, and the quote came from a letter he would write to a bishop in 1887. And this idea had been a theme of his general views, theologically or politically, given the promotion and application to the doctrine of papal infallibility at the time, something he disagreed with. This was basically the idea that the Pope at the time would be infallible in terms of whatever they were saying. A slightly longer version of the quote is as follows from the letter. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Great men are almost always bad men, even when they exercise influence and not authority. Still more, when you compound the tendency or the certainty of corruption by authority, there is no worse heresy than that the office sanctifies the holder of it. Now, this is not a segue into an adjacent discussion of historical misuse of power. I'm sure some of you wish that it were, but in fairness, that would be either a 100-hour-long video or a 50-episode series. I know also that many people have requested that I at some point attempt to dive into history and standalone videos like that, and I have always said I'd keep that on the maybe pile. If you did have a really specific event or figure you'd want me to discuss and speak about, maybe throw that in the comments, always open to it. Anyway, already getting too tangenty, but because today we're considering elements of the idea that absolute power corrupts, but also blending that with the concept of a self-fulfilling prophecy. When those two things are paired together, you really get a recipe for immense galactic-scale disaster and horrifying imperial rule. But that's not the only angle I want to consider today as well. We also want to think about understanding perspectives. Now, I've often spoken about the Emperor from a variety of perspectives. If you were to watch my original Emperor video from 1 to 3, you would get the feeling that I'm speaking to him from the glorious perspective of the Imperium, which I was. And the same with any video that is leaning Imperial. If I am just discussing what the Emperor is, or his intentions, or the literal events and actions that occurred, then I try to take a more questioning, objective position. Just as a small aside, the online space never ceases to be fascinating to me in terms of the comments and how people can choose to interpret or perceive bias. One thing that I'm sure most of you understand is that when I speak about 40k, I try to look at all angles. And the reason for that is because most of the time 40k is singularly approached from the lens of the Imperium, and I find it more interesting to be a bit broader than that. And of course, this is only part of the story because the sheer miasma of propaganda and distortion that emanates from the Inquisition and the Adeptus Terror contaminates everything. And I still have so much to speak about when it comes to the Emperor, sort of unbelievably, and honestly, it's amazing how much we can discuss around a singular figure when so little hard evidential material exists as to their actions, the person, and their intentions. But really, of course, that is the whole point as to why so little is written about the Emperor. Now, just moving sideways a little, I have always resisted wanting to speak too much to Dune. Because Dune, while an amazing verse, obviously, really deserves its own separate content, not blended in. And I just want to underscore, as I have in other videos, that word, obviously, to some of you writing comments right now. Because there's no hidden mystery that 40k shares some clear inspiration from Dune. This is not a hidden secret. Although I do think sometimes people give a little bit too much gravitas to how much is shared there. I think, at best, some are concepts that can be, for example, attributed to historical inspiration. Things like imperial authority, elite military forces, and so on. You can just look at anything in human history for that. The most significant Dune 40k threads are, of course, navigators, avoidance of AI, and very obviously, the God Emperor. And that last one relates to the discussion today. because as a viewer, as an audience, we tend to look upon figures such as the Emperor of Man with a very critical lens, and that may be fair given the seemingly unbelievable lapses in judgment. Failure to inform the Primarchs of the primordial truth, I know he's explained his reasoning. Failure to secure an archive of knowledge for humanity, and failure to ultimately avoid the heresy that would then lead to 10,000 years of stagnant, grinding misery and human suffering. I think it really shows that the Emperor is completely a fallible individual, or not, depending on what his real intentions are. But for us, we approach this with levels of information that are not available to those who exist in fiction. Things are very different if viewed in a chronological form and with only the information known to an individual at a specific point in time. Significant failures from our perspective may have occurred with sincere consideration that you had attempted or even a full belief that you were making the correct decisions in fiction. So what if you were attempting to enable a future scenario that you held supreme and complete belief were possible, but the missteps inevitably occur along the way, sacrifices have to be made, and the scale to which you are looking upon across an entire timeline for a civilization is so distant, it of course makes you appear very disconnected, cold, uncaring, because in the grand scheme of things, an individual life seems very small. This is the difficulty when you are such an individual as the Emperor of Man, or Paul Atreides. This isn't, again, a particularly complex concept here, but it is just interesting to consider that in the context of power, that, I think corrupts might be too strong a phrasing, but certainly that power changes an individual's entire outlook, along with events that shape your view of those around you and the future, such as the Emperor throughout human history, or for Paul, those that take place in his life around him leading to those that take place upon Dune itself. Now, I'm not going to describe the entire events of Dune and its subsequent books in excessive detail, because again, practical length, but I will give a brief overview. The TLDR, though, is that in Dune, for Paul Atreides, power comes to him, though he doesn't seek it. And when it does, he finds himself twisted onto a path wherein it is no longer a case of just what he believes should happen, but what he understands will and must happen. Specifically, the issue here is what happens when foresight comes into play for an individual who also has significant power, or that one and the other enable it. Also the idea that then this creates their ability to inspire a great following, for it leads them into making dangerous, often extremely destructive decisions without maybe worrying about the consequences as somebody who is looking at the shorter time period, the more in the moment perspective. Because their end goal is ultimately all that matters to them. They are thinking bigger, they're more powerful, they're looking beyond just the next few years. This is the ultimate end justifying the means scenario, because you're not only believing in the end, you're trusting that it will happen because you have seen that it happens. And so if you do what is necessary now, that will ensure the future occurs because you have seen it. But one individual, even a very powerful one, is still small. You cannot achieve this alone, and so the task becomes so grand and complex that it requires an almost incomprehensible scale of construction, planning, even necessary war. The actions that one might enable, the timeline to which such events would come to pass, are often across a scale that few would attempt to undertake, other than, say, a madman, or those who held some inhuman power within them, a power so great that they believed only with their leadership and total domination could the future be reshaped for the betterment of all, that the current period must end and they are the future. And it's this that is the absolute corruption that such power brings, because the scale upon which these actions play out is no longer that of the individual of the mortal lifespan, it's beyond and above. An individual life now will have much less value, as I said, in the scale to which an emperor or supremely empowered individual is looking upon. And to be clear, they need not be immortal either, for their absolute power enables the potential for an ultimate vision, and that exists beyond their own lifespan. And this returns to the context of the original quote, this concept of infallibility. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, because if you are infallible, nothing you do or say or enact can be questioned in any situation. And this means that in order for that certainty to remain true, any opposition cannot be tolerated. It must only be crushed. And when you pair this with a galactic messianic religion of zealots, well, then the end result is quite obviously going to become considerably troubling. So for those who are unfamiliar with Dune, I'll do a very superficial rundown of Paul Atreides and why the comparison with the Emperor is interesting. He is revealed to us as a scion of House Atreides. These are the esteemed rulers of a world dominated by oceans, and Paul is under the tutelage of his father, Duke Leto Atreides, and his mother, the Lady Jessica. She is a member of the secretive Bene Gesserit sisterhood, who are attempting to create a supreme being through various bloodline manipulation all throughout the galaxy. Paul feels a great weight of expectation upon him and is continually immersed in a relentless education to prime him for potential future rule and as just a scion of the Atreides family, which includes both combat and politics. Paul and the Atreides will be relocated to Arrakis at the behest of the Galactic Emperor, where the sole source of the coveted spice melange is located. This spice is critical to enable FTL travel in the Dune universe. And this abrupt relocation thrusts Paul into a completely alien, harsh environment, the polar opposite of his homeworld, and so he must then adapt to an entirely desert life. It's open to interpretation that just this relocation alone helps shift his outlook given the severity of the change, and suddenly all of his teachings, and especially those which relate to their enemies, the House Harkonnen, become very real, whereas before he was very isolated on his own homeworld, things seemed more distant and not particularly pressing. Paul is also exposed here on the world Arrakis, Dune, to the spice, and because of its power, but also because he has within him some power gifted from his mother and the Bene Gesserit, he experiences visions of the future, and these prophetic glimpses reveal his ultimate fate. But again, experiencing these visions becomes really a form of self-fulfilling prophecy, for without them, he may not have taken on certain actions or been strong enough to lead him to the future and to becoming the Kwisatz Haderach, a messianic figure with the power to transcend time and space. The visions are disturbing to Paul, they're troubling, and he struggles with the implications of his emerging abilities. He becomes increasingly aware of the weight of his destiny, the sacrifices that it will demand. Initially, Paul can dismiss the visions, but as events unfold upon Dune, he and what he has seen becomes continually validated by those around him. This, combined with those who espouse the belief of him fulfilling a prophecy and his disconnection from the status quo of the Imperium in the aftermath of the destruction of his family house upon Dune by the Harkonnen, all of these events push him ever forward toward a path to which he would likely never have chosen or been upon, but continues to have increasingly strong visions of his own future. Everything becomes this self-fulfilling cycle. Paul's strength, leadership, and abilities, his strategic acumen, enable him to then also unite the indigenous Fremen population of Arrakis under his banner. With the support of the Fremen, Paul launches a campaign against House Harkonnen on Dune and the Imperial forces of the Emperor. They emerge heroically victorious, but Paul has now become a deeply changed individual. He is not that boy of the Atreides. By the time of his coming power over the planet of Dune, Paul has fully embraced the self he has experienced in his visions and the belief of his fate in the future. Again, this is further validated and empowered by the long prophesied and ever-growing religious movement around him, with Paul leading them. He has long held visions of a holy war, and as more events fall into place, it only strengthens his belief that his choices and actions are not maybe what he believes is right, but indeed what must happen. And that's really the core of what we're thinking about today in terms of this balance between Paul and the Emperor. It's this idea that what you see and what you do is not necessarily what you would wish to happen, but what you feel and see must happen. Because despite his successes, Paul's ascent to power comes at a heavy cost. He's haunted by the weight of his decisions, the loss of loved ones, and the realization of just how his actions have set in motion a chain of events that could lead to a massive scale of violence and upheaval. He faces deep, challenging, internalized questions about morality, destiny, the nature of power, which is of course one of the key themes within the Dune series. And Paul's actions, which were driven by his visions and the way in which he was manipulated, passively or not, shapes the course of human history. One of the most interesting aspects of Dune is, of course, what comes in the later books. That Paul is not this heroic figure that many would see him as early on, this heroic lad who comes out strong and he defeats the bad forces. It is considerably deeper than that, as the author, you know, sought to clarify, because Paul is actually a greatly troubling figure and is a character designed to demonstrate the dangers of absolute power. It's not a simplistic hero story. In fact, it's been said that Frank Herbert, the author, was disappointed when he came to realise that people who had read Dune, the first book, were not reading the character of Paul as he had intended. They were seeing Paul as this hero, when in actuality the figure of Paul was meant to be this warning, which is why he then wrote Dune Messiah. It was designed to correct this. And like I said, it's just too much to get into Dune Messiah in detail and others that follow after. But essentially, we see Paul continue to navigate the consequences of his actions within the context of the series, the ongoing themes of power, religion, the human cost, all connected through the concept of destiny, and how Paul ended up where he did as the Emperor of the known universe, through arguably no fault of his own, at least in the early events that set the path. I think additionally what's very interesting is that the Denis Villeneuve ongoing movie series is now committed into expanding into that realm where we'll see the culmination of Paul's journey. And that's going to be very, very interesting to see how they handle a true masterpiece of narrative from the perspective that they're going to have to take Paul Atreides, who for many watching that movie and who do not know the material, will be entirely unaware that they're about to witness a severe U-turn in the framing of, for them, what is probably a very beloved character now. Which I have to say I'm 100% here for. The success of Dune, I think, also correlates directly with the downfall of Star Wars. In the case of the former, you have a narrative that is being handled in a very serious, adult manner. It presumes and treats the audience not like idiots, and can handle a slow-paced setup where not everything is explained, an emphasis on world-building, storytelling, and a respect for the established source material. Not in the case of the latter, the burning of decades of lore material, exponential over-the-top VFX, storytelling by committee, and worst of all, fear. And what I mean by that is fear to get a grip and take some chances with characters, take them on an unexpected path, turn them around from good to bad, and most of all, actually produce a well-meshed narrative that feels grounded and plausible in the context of the existing world, the lore, as we understand it. Not give the audience jarring whiplash, because that breaks people from a narrative and eventually forces an audience to just disengage completely. So with that said, let's consider the Emperor within the same overview. Born in the ancient lands of what will be considered Eastern Europe during the 8th millennium BC, the individual who would ascend to become the Emperor of Mankind emerges to the backdrop of what will become the exponential growth of human civilization. Across the centuries and millennia, he will involve himself from a very early period in the affairs of humanity. At an early age, and after seeing a vision of the death of his father at the hands of his uncle, this first instance shapes the outlook of the Emperor as to what humanity is, so that by the time he encounters other perpetuals, he is already a warlord attempting to shift and advance humanity beyond what it should be capable of in this time. His rise is, of course, propelled by his own power and intellect, for it is one that eclipses the ordinary boundaries of mortal comprehension. With that said, we know little of the Emperor from this point until the period known as the Age of Strife. Just where he was involved in the development of humanity and where he was not is entirely unknown. For the Emperor could have been more heavily involved in how humanity expanded to where it would ultimately be around the 25th and 26th millennium. With the vague obscurity of 40k lore, though, the origins of the Emperor, even themselves arguably, a point of contention. So we really know nothing of that middle period. What we do know is, of course, that after the Age of Strife, the Emperor would launch the Wars of Unification that would culminate in the monumental endeavour known as the Great Crusade by the 30th millennium, a vast and relentless campaign to reunify humanity under a single banner. Spearheading this ambitious undertaking are his genetically enhanced warriors, the Space Marines, alongside legions of Imperial forces. Central to the Emperor's strategic vision with the Astartes is the creation of the Primarchs, though, 20 peerless beings endowed with fragments of his own genetic material. However, before these paragons of humanity can reach maturity, they are tragically scattered across the galaxy, As we would later learn, this was in fact part due to figures who he would encounter in the earliest of days in the era of ancient humanity, and who strongly disagreed with what he was trying to do. This was really an attempt to slow down or stop what he was attempting. Throughout all of this, though, and similarly to Paul Atreides, runs the fact that the Emperor is attempting to bring into reality his vision of a future for humanity. And this itself is another point of contention, but it is generally thought that he was either seeking to empower humanity to resist the dangers of the galaxy and the warp, to disconnect it from material space, shield it for either all time or a period of time. Because if humanity were ever to emerge, it would then be advanced or changed, either psychically evolved or inert, so as to resist the worst predations of the entities that reside in the warp. Generally, this is considered what the Emperor was trying to do. But there also remains the possibility that the Emperor wished to bring about this grand scheme whereby he is empowered by the messianic worship of himself as the God Emperor to rise and become the true God of humanity. That's a bit of an outside choice, but it is a possibility. The apex of the Emperor's journey, though, sees him wounded so severely that he cannot continue in his current state of existence. And this occurs during the cataclysmic betrayal orchestrated by his most favoured and trusted son Horus, War Master of the Imperium. He is corrupted by the insidious influence of Chaos during the period, which of course is the Horus Heresy. It culminates in the apocalyptic conflagration known as the Siege and Battle of Terror. In the aftermath, the Emperor's shattered form is ensconced within the arcane and strange machinery of the Golden Throne. See my video about the Golden Throne. Entombed for all time within this construct, the Emperor endures 10,000 years of agony. His consciousness is ensnared within this machine, which sees him unable to resurrect, but forced to endure a cycle of living death. His corporeal vessel may well be all but gone by M41, but his psychic presence and his symbolic leadership of humanity continues to serve as a powerful means by which humanity is unified. The Emperor is this figurehead of Imperial faith, and whether intentionally or not, the Emperor has become the bastion of hope amidst the encroaching darkness that hungers for humanity's annihilation. So there are quite obvious parallels between the Emperor 40K and Paul in Dune. Whilst the Emperor's ascension takes place though over millennia, the result remains a comparable narrative, where we see someone presented with power and a vision. That results in an absolutely unequivocal belief in themselves as this messiah figure. Now, whether the Emperor wished this to be the case or not, he was certainly more than aware of it throughout this time where he was known as the Emperor, from the time of unification to where he would transcend mortal bounds, evolving into an object of veneration and worship for billions, even trillions, with countless souls across the galaxy revering him as the divine arbiter of their collective destiny. The connecting concept with the two figures is that they are both cautionary tales of what can happen when a single figure with great power falls into believing their destiny is inescapable, who rules with a perception of divinity and is considered to hold absolute infallibility. Understanding is a three-edged sword. Your side, their side, and the truth. It's one of the greatest quotes from Babylon 5 and J. Michael Straczynski, the Vorlon expression that understanding is a three-edged sword. In the context of what I was thinking about today, this came to mind as it encapsulates the complexity of perception, visions, and interpretation to understanding any given situation. Such concepts that would undoubtedly be considered by figures such as Paul and the Emperor in planning their future actions and the path of their own destiny. Focusing back more toward 40K now though, from the perspective of the Imperium of Man and its loyal followers, the God Emperor becomes revered as this divine, benevolent ruler, the saviour of humanity. But his historical actions such as the unification of Terror, the creation of the Primarchs, and the establishment of the Imperial Truth are seen as glorious achievements that safeguarded and protected humanity for the millennia that would follow. These were seen as wholly necessary steps to safeguard humanity's survival in a hostile galaxy, essential for maintaining order and protecting humanity from the myriad threats it faces. This is the perspective of your side, that sees the Emperor's actions as entirely infallible, that in holding absolute power, his decisions and path were surely the only one that were feasible. Of course, as I've said on many occasions, this is highly questionable when we consider that many civilizations survived the Age of Strife with Dark Age of Technology Archives, or even Working STC. The second edge to the blade is as seen from the viewpoint of the dissenters, the rebels, those oppressed by the Imperium's regime, heretics from the perspective of the Imperium, for they will see the God Emperor's actions and all who act in his name from the Adeptus Terra down as tyrannical and oppressive. They are the individuals who exist upon a world or system and ask, why must we submit to the rule of the Imperium? Who gets to make that decision, and why must we submit to it and the authoritarian rule of a figure we have never seen nor know anything of, the imposition of the imperial truth and the suppression of individuality, denying freedom and autonomy? Those who dare to consider any other option, of course, will face the use of imperial forces, the Inquisition, even Astartes, to enforce compliance and root out whatever shifting benchmark they defined that day as heresy. All of this only further solidifies his image as a despotic ruler in the eyes of many. The first two edges, then, are those of polar perspectives. But because you must see all sides in order to truly understand a thing, the final edge is truth. And the truth here is that, as nearly is always the case, things are grey. And to understand that things are grey and not definably clear is often unpopular, rarely a position that people try to argue from, because it is of course more difficult, more nuanced, and doesn't result in a clear position nor an actionable design, which for many people is just very unsatisfactory. The God Emperor's actions lie somewhere between the two extremes. His actions reflect the inherent complexity and often moral ambiguity of his design for humanity, and while he undoubtedly possesses noble, even sincere intentions in his efforts to protect humanity from the existential eternal threats, his methods often involve highly questionable decisions and innocent sacrifices on, some might argue, an unacceptable, even a counterproductive scale. All of his achievements had degrees of failure and relied wholly on a framework of authoritarian governments that usually amounted to do what we say or you will be killed, or worse. Which brings us back to the truth of the matter, which is of course that while intentions may be sincere in his visions, in his belief that only he can save humanity and that the only means to do this is by forced acceleration channeled into a specific future configuration that remains known only to himself, at the great cost of what many would argue is what defines humanity, raises significant ethical, moral issues, not to mention many situations that just seem wildly hypocritical and provoke debate over the true nature of his vision and legacy. And I would argue this is very much the same also with Paul Atreides. But I think when it comes to the Emperor, this is something that is always brought up by those who disagree with him. But coming in fiction for a moment, speaking to the Emperor, I think this is something that is always brought up by those who disagree with him, in those who have known him as something other than the Emperor in the past, which I will speak to in this last section. This idea of people who really understand him criticizing and saying what is actually happening. In essence though, the reason why I felt the application here of this Vorlon expression from Babylon 5 served so well as a structure for the Emperor is in reminding us that understanding any figure or event requires consideration of multiple perspectives and interpretations, not just singular. Because in a broader sense, this is why it is so important to do your own research, explore subjects and material beyond just what others tell you, in an attempt to more fully understand something. And that is what many people who truly understood the Emperor did and came to the conclusion of. So really, what this video is about today is my attempt to approach the concept of a God Emperor with a mind to the perspective that they themselves were approaching it from. This is why I did that intro and why I wanted to bring in the comparable example of Paul in Dune. Because when we consider this and attempt to understand from all sides why they ended up on the path and the decisions that they did, it underscores the complexity of the character and their actions. And I think it challenges, maybe even dismisses, overly simplistic notions of a figure who is infallibly correct and heroic, but also the opposite. It dismisses this idea also of an individual who is devoid of empathy, aggressive and power mad, villainous even. Basically, again, not Star Wars is what I'm saying, where the literal colours they wear are light against dark, comically simplistic. With Dune and 40K, while undeniably some aspects, most especially in 40K, are absolutely taken to an insane over-the-top level that pushes well beyond the bounds of plausibility and necessitates suspension of disbelief, I've always noted that for everywhere where we see elements that are overcharged, there are as many that are subtle or constructed in a manner that enables us to consider what it means to be human, to consider scientific, theological or philosophical concepts, and that invites us to reflect upon the nature and the danger seen in those who achieve absolute power, demand sacrifice, achieve a following, who consider your decisions completely infallible. All of this comes at the expense of the objective truth, and it only becomes exponentially worse when set against the grim, dark horror of the far future. And I want to mention a favourite for me still being the Golden Age AI ship that travelled forward in time, arrived in M41, and the captain immediately headed for the nearest station, promptly to which they were all captured for espousing behaviour and language that surely must be heretical, and after significant horrific torture, just executed because, you know, the Imperium. The ship's AI, outraged, would ultimately cause significant damage then and later, and the AI that had seemingly bonded very closely with its human crew developed a fierce hatred for humanity then, and upon its discovery by Mechanicus and Astartes, gave one of the most brutal takedowns of the Imperium that has ever been given. The short version is that it basically tells all present that you disgust me. That ship, of course, was the Spirit of Eternity, you'll remember I've quoted it before. But I bring that one up again because the outrage of the AI in that ship was so extreme. It gives us this glimpse, it gives us something as a point of reference into the fact that the Emperor's path seems to have at least in part been so devastatingly flawed, as evidenced by the fact that many civilizations were discovered during the Crusade who were peaceful, seemingly doing quite well. Instead of being adopted and amalgamated into what the Emperor was doing, they were just crushed. This is the horror and the darkness that humanity had fallen into at the behest of the Emperor, because of his singular belief that his path was the only way, and that anybody that stood against that, any form of resistance, had to be eliminated. And that is the idea that I was speaking about of when you have a figure who is deemed infallible, no other alternative pathway can be tolerated, it must be crushed, which is exactly what the Imperium has done. To me, this is one of the most bleakly comedic aspects of 40K though, because it seems very self-evident that his internment within the Golden Throne, as this now near lifeless husk, sustained only by the sacrifice of many millions of innocents, it casts a very heavy shadow over his divine status, and it calls into question the true cost of both his immortality and his infallibility. But I think my overall conclusion is that while this is an observation that is readily apparent in the 40K verse, it always remains interesting to consider the core narrative, that although it caused destruction, misery, and left humanity to be suffocated slowly by many millennia of cultural and technological stagnation, the overarching approach of the Emperor when we consider his complete journey is actually fairly understandable. It may not ultimately be right, preferable, or even beneficial in the long term, but it is understandable, and that's what I really wanted to think about today, is understanding it. Because it was that concept of an absolute strength of vision and belief, often that would be further instilled into both Paul and the Emperor by those around them, that they were the only individuals who could safeguard the future, with their foresight then ended up causing what would become a self-fulfilling prophecy of a God Emperor's rule. Of course, in 40K and in Dune, many around them can see what is coming. It's not shocking to anyone who was paying attention that things turned out as they did. And I do think that that is another important aspect, that there are many who said, are we the baddies? And this is of course why the scattering of the Primarchs occurred. Imperial history in 40K is often still told from the perspective of the Imperium. And this is something that I always try to remind people. Things like the codexes, they often omit narrative elements that make what is described more morally grey in terms of the lore, because it's faction specific. And that's that third edge of understanding the Emperor and the Imperium, is that it was never unopposed. Many individuals, even those close to the Emperor, did not betray him, but they did try to dissuade him. They tried to throw a spanner in the works, slow things down, because they could see that it was all going to end in tears, as it ultimately would. as many of the other Perpetuals seemed to voice the fact that they felt the Emperor was not helping humanity in the long term, but was even being destructive by actively forcing humanity in the shorter term onto a path that he believed he had seen was right. Because why must that be accepted just because he says so? It's because of his arrogance, it's because of his power, it's because of his infallible self-belief. And I will note that this is something that remains ever woefully underdescribed in the lore of 40K, is just why the Emperor was so desperate to quick fix humanity, or why it's presented that way. Because in actuality, there wasn't really much that was fast about it. I think the bigger question might be, what did he get involved in all the way up until the collapse of the Golden Age? Because his involvement there is what remains all the more troubling, that potentially humanity could have survived all the better had he not intervened. And some of the Perpetuals believe that that was the way it should have gone. Now people may say, well, look at what happened during the Dark Age of Technology and the fall of humanity. They had their chance and failed. Now, sure, but we also can't ignore the fact that he had apparently been heavily involved in the forcible acceleration of humanity since that ancient period. So truly, who knows if the collapse of the Dark Age of Technology would even have occurred were it not for the Emperor trying to bring forward a future that he alone felt he had the power and foresight to bring to fruition. During the Golden Age, humanity was so far advanced and moving this path forward, it's difficult to believe that the Emperor would have seen what he had to offer in the Imperium and thought that that was better. Maybe he just didn't see it coming and actually thought humanity was doing very well for itself at that time. What we don't know is perhaps maybe he did see the pathway that was coming from the Dark Age of Technology, and that he saw there an opportunity to create conditions where he would be able to act and finally set humanity onto the path that he had so long foreseen, with himself as the head of a galactic human empire, that this would be a moment of opportunity that he was not going to miss or willfully ignore. And so he didn't do anything to create the collapse of the Golden Age, but maybe he didn't do anything to really stop it or help it either. Now I want to avoid drifting into some tangential concepts here again about perception of free will, seeing things become quickly very philosophical and conceptual here. But it does appear that the Emperor did not have just a singular vision, because I've often compared his foresight to that of the Eldar Farseers, where in principle the concept of farsight seems much the same between the Emperor and the Eldar, really any psychers. There's little different in how they compare, and this is because it seems that the Emperor could see iterations of possibilities, or as he referred to them, configurations. And that's where things like the Emperor's Tarot, some of the games that he and Malkador would play through various heresy novels are sort of looking towards this idea that they're trying to predict different possibilities and how things are going to play out, which Primarchs are going to turn against each other, and so on and so on. And then at other times, he appears to have even been blind to some things that were coming, which follows again with what we know of Farseers. They can't see everything, they can just see possible pathways. And the most simple version is that it is extraordinarily difficult to predict the future that is many, many thousands of years in the future. Even the Necrons struggle with this, and they are perhaps the most adept at studying and manipulating temporal events. And the Necron approach is one of science, not of this psychic mysticism. Suffice to say though, the Emperor's foresight, no matter how he presented it as such, was not total, nor was it clear. And that is something that is important to note, because it then follows that it takes a staggering degree of arrogance to believe that you alone would be the one who has the self-appointed right and clarity to force an entire galactic empire into your vision, which, as I said, although quite separated in terms of the literal beats of the narrative, is still heavily comparable to Paul in Dune. In the sense that, as individuals, in the earliest times and events that begin to shift their way of thinking, they were likely not as absolute in their belief, or perhaps even the belief in themselves. But over time, and with events that would follow, and individuals who would begin to consider them as superior and later messianic, it gives rise to a leader who simply believes to the core of their being that they are right. Moreover, that no one other than themselves can achieve what must be done. And it is this that will become a near prophetic, unshakable belief that then ultimately becomes the foundation for their ascension, a rise to absolute power, and a perception of complete infallibility in those who follow them, achieving these immense followings that would reshape human civilization at a galactic level, and of course in the process lead to the slaughter of billions. For the Emperor, what becomes apparent much later is the fact that it appears he all along was in fact shaping the destiny for humanity within his own vision, and that this was not a set future, but one he chose to act upon. This is made entirely clear to us in the final book of the Siege of Terra series, where we see the Emperor persuaded by others and actively choosing a different pathway, thereby bringing a different outcome for the future, if only to avoid the total failure of his original vision and escaping a descent, at least for a time, into complete darkness. But what I think we gain in understanding a figure like the Emperor, or I should say understanding as best we can, is to consider, would you have done things differently? It's easy to critique with hindsight, but when placed in the moment, with all you understood about yourself, with all the available information you had, would you make those choices? It's easy to consider the Emperor should have handheld the Primarchs more, but as any parent knows, you cannot watch or control their lives past a certain point. Trust is involved. And any further discussion really is going to drift into topics that I've covered before, like, did the Emperor intend for the heresy to always happen? Did he plan everything to unfold as it did? Or was he just winging it? Did he quite simply run out of time to complete certain actions before events that he knew were unchangeable occurred? I think all of this is one of the major reasons why I very much enjoy 40K, because it is enjoyable to me to dive into those details, to consider all the elements, and I always enjoy discussions of the Emperor because of just how ambiguous a figure he is, which is why it always leaves you to wonder, what would you have done? And that's exactly what I would like you to do. Tell me in the comments below the video today. If you've enjoyed, please like and consider subscribing to the channel, and if there are any very well put together comments, I think it's about time that I might select the best for a future video to have some audience interaction. So as always, thanks for all of your support, and I'll see you all in the next one.